Welcome to the Alcohol Rethink podcast with me, your host, Patrick Fox. This podcast is for the guys out there who question the role that alcohol plays in their lives. Many want to stop drinking and don't know where to go or how to start. We're going to cover all of that and more. Let's go. Hi guys, and welcome to episode 77 of the Alcohol Rethink podcast. Really looking forward to this week's show, guys. Got a really cool guest on again. You may have already heard him on the podcast, so that's going to be fun. But before I introduce him, just want to let you guys know about a group coaching program I am going to be running starting in January of 2023. It's called Renegade Sobriety. It's for men only, and it's going to be a fucking awesome, epic opportunity for you to really take control of your relationship with alcohol. And by take control, I mean actually rethink it completely and stop drinking. There's going to be 8 different modules as we go through the 8 weeks, and group coaching, live coaching, a little bit of one-to-one coaching as well. It's going to be really, really good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm like coming up with some great ideas and how I can teach you guys what it is you need to learn, but also like empower you to create and make your own decisions about this journey to sobriety that you may be on. So if you're interested, check out the show notes. There's a little link there for you, or go to www.patrickjfox.com/renegade-sobriety and you can register your interest there. All right, guys, without further ado, we've got our guest of the week. Today, I am delighted to welcome back a previous guest on the show. His name is Rod Boothroyd. He featured in episode 66, which I'd highly recommend you go and listen to. And in that episode, we were talking about a book that he'd written called Warrior, Magician, King, and Lover Archetypes. And today, we are going to kind of have a continuation of that call, and I'm really excited about what Rod is going to be bringing to us today. So Rod, firstly, welcome back to the show.
Yay, thank you. It's great to be here. Really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you, Patrick.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So we looked at the 4 different archetypes last time. Mm. We looked at how they can show up in each of our lives and how we can access them as well, like using them for us. And today, what we're going to be speaking about, and I'm really looking forward to having a conversation and learning more as well, is about shadow work and emotional wounding as well. So perhaps you could speak to that for us, Rod.
I will. And, you know, it's a strange coincidence, Patrick, that I'm going through some of Robert Moore's, who you might recall wrote the original book on archetypes, that one, which a lot of your readers will have heard of. So I'm going through some of the books that have been printed since his death, which are basically collections of the lectures that he gave. And this was the one I picked up a couple of days ago.
Mm.
And is astounding when he talks about the power of shadow. So I haven't got through much of it yet, but the first 40, 50 pages are so relevant to what's going on in the world today. You know, for instance, there might be a lot of people, me included, I would say, thinking, how in God's name did we get into this situation with Ukraine and Putin and so on and so forth? And yet when you read this book by Moore, it's so obvious that the cause of our problems is shadow.
Mm.
So let's talk about what shadow is. On a simple level, let's think of a child who's being brought up in an environment where certain things are not welcome. I've got a very good friend who's was brought up in Dublin, in quite a poor area of the city and very strict Catholic background. So he tells me that when he went home, any anger that he displayed was not welcome, as in he'd get a slap across the head for being angry. So then he learned his anger was not welcome in that environment. So what's he going to do with it? Because it's a natural impulse. He's got a lot of anger because that's the way life is. We all run into boundary infringements and people crossing our paths in ways that make us angry. But he goes home and he tries to express his anger. It is not welcome here. Don't bring your anger in this house. Answer, he puts it into shadow, like we all do with the things that are not welcome in childhood. Yep. So what does that mean, putting it into shadow? It's such an evocative term. You know, people talked about Robert Bly and many of the early pioneers of men's work talked about the shadow bag, like it was almost a physical reality, this kind of big bag hanging over your shoulder. You could stuff into it all the things that the world around you didn't like when you were a kid. What it actually means is it's pushed down out of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's repressed into the unconscious. Somehow the child exerts enough energy to suppress it. And of course, in the extreme form, what you get a completely adapted child who has, for all intents and purposes, not got any anger in his system or whatever it may be, and becomes, you know, perhaps what we would call a people pleaser. It's a very nice person who's always ready to help and assist and encourage, very smiley. The kind of person as an adult you could be around and you would think, there's something missing from this person. What is it? He's not complete. His anger's not there. And, you know, we can extend that idea. It's a very simple idea. There's this cliche, isn't there, that girls are not allowed to be angry and boys are not allowed to cry. So it's a bit of a simplistic assumption about how the world is, but maybe there's truth in it. My friend in Ireland, by the way, in Dublin, said when he went home crying, he got hit in the head for crying. See, what's wrong with you? If you keep on crying, I'll give you something to cry about. So he's suppressing not only his anger, but his grief and his tears and his sadness. And of course, what that means is he grows up into an adult who's not living a complete life, who hasn't even got access to his complete range of feelings. It's a very, very simple way of representing shadow.
Yeah, that really resonates. And kind of like, I think about myself, I like wanting to be a nice guy. You know, like kind of that's the what comes up for me when you were sharing that about people pleasing, like wanting to be seen as being nice by everybody, to be accepted. And this idea of shadow, right? Like not accepting those parts of us, because at a young age, and as you say, we probably don't even recognize when it would have happened, which is why I think, you know, sometimes more therapeutic approaches can be really helpful when working with guys, especially with maladaptive behavior, addictions and stuff like that as well. But this idea of shadow is almost, there's this shame attached to it.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah, it's almost like it's bad or negative or dark or black.
Yeah.
And certainly to go back for a moment, what I was saying about this book by Moore, what he's talking about.
To let guys know, sorry to interrupt, like if anyone's interested, the book that Rod is actually showing is called Facing the Dragon.
Yeah, by Robert Moore.
By Robert Moore, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for that. No, that's okay. What he's saying in there is that when a child's emotions are suppressed, they go down into the unconscious, but they don't just stay there the way they were when they went in it. Something happens to them. You know, this idea of darkness and blackness, Robert Bly put it beautifully. I mean, it's an expression that stuck in my mind. He said, what you put into shadow de-evolves into barbarism. And when you take it out or it pops out years later, it does not look like it did when it went in.
Yeah.
It looks like rage. Grief looks like addiction, self-destructive behavior, et cetera, et cetera. So what Moore was saying in that book is, you know, all of us who've got this energy and don't do anything with it, stuck in the shadow bag, if you want to call it that, the unconscious, if you want to call it that, it's going to ferment into something terrible. And the more we put in there, the worse it's going to look. Like, for example, I talk about rage. What the hell, I would love to know, happened to Vladimir Putin when he was a child. What did he put into his unconscious that causes him to be now, as a so-called adult, behaving in the way that he's behaving? That's the power of shadow that Moore was talking about. Destructive, something that we could actually even perhaps call evil, but certainly nothing with any good intention. Certainly a kind of dark, dark energy. Now, it's not just destructive for the world, it's destructive for the individual too, of course. And therein lies the importance of doing something about it.
Yeah. I'd just like to share like a personal experience for me is, I think I learned that in myself about anger when I was younger, that it wasn't okay to be angry. And when it comes up, as it does time to time, and I love that analogy you gave that the doctor, was it Dr. Moore?
Robert Moore, yeah.
Robert Moore, sorry, yeah, he says like about how it turns into like barbarianism almost, and it does, like it just feels so raw, and it is scary actually. I find that I'm afraid of my own anger. I'm afraid of what I might do with it sometimes, and I'm working on it. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does pop up, it's like, whoa, what is going on here? It's
Yeah,
really.
totally. Oof. You said it, Patrick. And I'm as you talk about that, I'm thinking of something similar but different, which is the power of grief and that what we'd call the lover wound, it's all about disrupted attachment as a child or not getting love, to put it even more simply. The power that has to wreak havoc in people's lives with addiction, we're not just talking drink, we're talking drugs, we're talking gambling, we're talking sex, we're talking social media, on and on it goes. And the thing about that to me is you would never think, or I would never think, or would not have thought before I learned about this stuff, how does a lack of attachment or bonding in childhood become a self-destructive addiction to drugs and drink and Christ knows what when you're an adult? The pathway between the two is very obscure, can be very obscure.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And the more I learn about this kind of stuff, like the deeper it goes, of course. And as I was saying just before we started the show, like I'm also working with Gabor Mate's program, Compassionate Inquiry, and within that, he talks about how we form beliefs before we even have language, right? So like as young children, if we were just left to cry. For example, this is something that he shares, is that if we're just left to cry because doctor's advice is like don't pick up the baby, etc. And then maybe it takes a week or so, but eventually the baby stops crying and it sleeps through the night, that like you think, oh, they've learned. But really what's happening is the baby has given up. They have conformed. They realize that no one's coming to get them, and so within that trauma happens, right? Like they've learned that nobody cares about me, so I'm just going to go to sleep as a defense mechanism.
Absolutely. It's absolute tragedy. I completely agree. Those beliefs, particularly the ones formed early on in life, can be quite hard to change, as in, nobody will like me if I create a fuss. You're not even conscious. If I make a noise, nobody's going to pay any attention. There's no point trying because nothing will happen. And on and on and on it goes. It's just, these are the things that shape our adult lives. And as for the baby not being picked up, I've heard from women who were gave birth in the 60s when that was the way it was, Dr. Spock and all that rubbish, to put it politely, fighting against their own maternal instincts, against their own knowledge that the baby needed to be picked up because it was the medical establishment's view that you left the baby to cry and it was a 4-hour feeding regime, appalling damage done to children, really, really serious damage, as exactly what you've just said, Patrick. What would that do to somebody's expectation of the world? Like, the world is never going to give me what I want. I can't have what I want. I'm not worthy of having what I want. And on and on and on it goes, just kind of shrinking people's potential just because that's what happened in childhood. And because something went into shadow, my needs for self-care, my needs for nurturing, my needs to be fed, my belief in the goodness of humanity, because I cried for food as a baby and nothing happened. It isn't just feelings that go into shadow. It's the kind of perception of self that can go into shadow. I'm a good person. No, I'm not, because if I were a good person, that would never have happened to me. I must be a bad person. And so on and so on. These beliefs about self, all based on what actually happened because of other people's actions and have no truth in them, but that's what determines people's lives. Contents of that famous shadow bag hanging on their shoulder.
So we think about the shadow, and we're kind of beginning to recognize this through like our conversation we're having here, that actually whilst we put it in the shadow, it doesn't mean it's something that we ignore or that we don't look at. In fact, if anything, ignoring has the opposite effect of what we want in our lives.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a story, if I may, along those that relates to what you've just said along those lines. When I started training as a therapist, I went to some 2-week residential training seminars. And the first one I went to, I walked through the door of that room and I knew there was something different about the people in that room compared to the people I spent most of my life around. So I sat down and I listened to the check-ins, and it gradually became clear to me what was going on. Those people who were feeling different had done 10 years, 20 years, 18 years, 17 years, 13 years of personal therapy, looking at what was in their shadow. So here's how it works when you do the work, not necessarily for 20 years, let me quickly add, in case anyone's already despairing. When you take stuff out of shadow, what you do is you gain access to the energy you've been using to hold it down. You know, Bly talked about that metaphor of a cord around the neck of the bag that you had to pull tight all the time to keep the stuff in there because it had its own energy and it wanted to come out. And sometimes your attention goes and the cord loosens and it flies out anyway, road rage, shouting at your wife, shouting at your husband, breaking down in tears unexpectedly. All of that stuff. But the more that you open the bag deliberately, the more that you take what's in there out and look at it and do something with it, the less effort it takes to hold that shut, the less effort it takes to carry it around, and the more energy you have to project out into the world. That's the true life energy of who you are as a person. And what people call that is charisma. It's access to the life energy that you're otherwise using to keep stuff that somebody else told you wasn't acceptable out of sight. Suddenly becomes free, available to you to use for your own purposes in the world. Quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it is very. And I like that. Even just as you were describing it, you can see how, you know, letting it out of the bag, like it begins to lose its power. I guess it begins to lose that shaming of the self, shaming of those parts of you, so that you can show up. And it doesn't mean that you, what am I trying to say? It's like, you still get to be angry. Like anger is healthy response in a lot of situations, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and it can lead to some actually very positive things, right? Like, standing up for yourself, and it, you know, like we look at what's happening in the world with in terms of racism and sexism and all of these things, right? Like it has a purpose, and it has a voice, and it needs to be heard, but in a not constructive word, because that kind of like doesn't feel appropriate, but in a way that is healthy, I guess, right?
Totally. Yeah, here's the thing, you put your finger on it exactly. These are natural parts of being human. That's the point. But when they're natural parts of being human, they have a very different way of expressing themselves than if they've been stuck into the unconscious shadow bag for 20 years. So let's think about anger. You know, we'd see that as not necessarily a good thing, but anger takes many forms. It's basically the energy of getting out into the world and getting things done, you know. Anger is one specific form of an energy that allows you to make a mark on the world, to have an impact on the world, to put it simply. Anger is the form of that energy which arises when somebody crosses your boundary. It's a natural human defensive reaction. And actually, assertiveness too, getting what you want, being able to speak your mind clearly, is the same energy, just manifesting in a different form. So I'm completely with you on this. These are good energies. You know, the number, just to change the subject away from anger to grief for a moment, the number of men I have met who have told me things like, when I was a kid and my grandparents died, I wasn't allowed to go to the funeral because it would upset me. You know, what meaning the adults around the child felt uncomfortable at the idea of the child crying, when actually what needed to happen was precisely that. The child needed to express the grief of that loss. So they're not allowed to go to the funeral of their grandparents or whoever or whatever it is. And they have this grief, which isn't, they know isn't welcome. What do they do with it? Stick it into the shadow bag and become hardened in some way, because that access to the softness of grief and the compassion that follows from it isn't available to them. You know, every time that something isn't expressed naturally, there's going to be an effect in the system that is perhaps not good. And what I mean by that is, particularly around anger, it's traumatic. That's the truth of it. It builds up trauma. You know, Peter Levine is the guy who's opened our eyes to this. Every action that's not completed and has energy behind it can lead to trauma. In other words, can lead to something building up in the system that's dysfunctional. And say the way to deal with that, come on to this more in a minute, is to do some shadow work to get what's being put away out and change it into something healthier.
Yeah. I think it's Peter Levine that says that, you know, like, trauma is not what happens to you, but it's what happens inside of you, which is what you're saying there, right? Like, something happens, exactly. And you have that emotion and it gets suppressed, and then unfortunately it comes out in the wrong way, or unhelpful ways, I guess, as we get older and stuff. And in that example you gave about grief, because I think it's quite pertinent as well, is like that child, right? Like, because those adults aren't able to deal to regulate their own emotions, right? Like, the child then learns that they're responsible for how other people feel as well, right? Whilst suppressing their own emotions at the same time. Totally. It's just like a double-edged sword.
It's quite breathtaking, isn't it? I mean, from the purity of who we are as human beings to this kind of molded system that's made into something so far removed from where we started out, is extraordinary. And I often think, well, in a kind of speculative way, really, maybe our one most important life task is to actually recover who we truly were before all that contortion and false beliefs and shadow work, shadow bag stuff happened. That our lives really, in essence, are about recovering the true essence of who we are, each and every one of us. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really believe that, you know, it's in us, like, there is that true essence, and it's about, you know, unshaming ourselves, doing that shadow work, and being very, very curious and compassionate, right? Like, I say that word a lot on this podcast, but it's true. Yeah. And I think it's a hard one for guys to stomach sometimes, right? It's like,
go on.
Compassion. Well, what is, because compassion, you've got to be like, I've got this bravado, I've got this mask I need to wear, that I've got things under control and I can do it all by myself and stuff, right? Yeah. And compassion doesn't seem to fit with that.
Well, I'm just to refer back to Robert Moore again. In that same book, he talks about many things that are pertinent to this, but he refers to the Vietnam vets. It's a story many of us have heard over the years of how they came back so wounded, so unable to cope with life, and were basically either ignored or shut up in veteran administration hospitals in America, because nobody knew how to deal with the trauma they'd experienced. The army was great at turning innocent boys, actually, is what it was, let's be honest about it, into fighting machines. When they came back traumatized, it did not know how to turn them back into decent human beings. And he makes the contrast with perhaps tribal societies, pre-literate societies, where they had, we don't want to romanticize those societies, they were often quite violent and sometimes quite warlike. But what they did have, it seems, were processes for turning men into fighting warriors. And then when they came back from battle, turning them back into citizens who could be useful, healthy members of the community. So they knew how to deal with trauma. But we as a society don't. We send young men off to fight, and God forbid, young women too. And once they've been in a battle, we don't really know what to do with them. Although I do think that's changing a little bit. I'd like to believe it is.
Mm.
But anyway, so the question becomes, both on a personal scale, on a societal scale, what do you do with the trauma and all of this stuff that's accumulated and being shut away in the bag to get people back into a place of living a full, expansive life? It's a great question.
Yeah, it really is. And I think giving someone a witness to their trauma, you know, whether that is a coach or a therapist, or even just having somebody to talk to about their experience, and being able to see, like, they're not their experience. They're not what happened to them, right? Being able to step back.
Absolutely, definitely. And beyond that, compassion. You know, this is where compassion really, really plays a part. That to be alongside somebody, not just listening to them perhaps, but also just holding them in a compassionate space, is in itself incredibly healing. It's just, excuse me, miraculous how that can impact people's well-being. Now, if you can bring into that space something that allows them to take whatever they've shoved away out of sight, examine it, do something with it, then you're onto a perhaps part of that idea of allowing them to recover who they originally would have been without the trauma and the experiences that made them put all of this energy into shadow.
Yeah.
So there's one thing I'd like to mention before we just go on to talk about that shadow work.
Sure.
It's worthy of remembering, I think, Robert Johnson was the first chap, as far as I'm aware, to point out that what goes into the shadow bag is not just the negative, in inverted commas. Also, we've already discussed that point, anger and grief, not really negative at all. But, you know, from a societal point of view, we don't want that around here. Take your anger out of this house. Don't you cry. I'll give you something to cry about. All that stuff. Girls don't get angry. Oh, no. You be a nice little girl. Don't show your anger here. All that kind of rubbish. Is that Robert Johnson made the point that, in his opinion, I think he overstated it, but he said that he thought 90% of what was in shadow was the golden stuff. And what do we mean by that? Well, I look at the young children in my family, and they have been encouraged to express their power and their glory and their confidence and their sense of self-worth and their desire to be seen and heard. You know, the opposite of the things that perhaps I grew up with, and I'm sure many of the people listening grew up with, along the lines of pride goes before a fall. Oh, you're showing off again, aren't you? Don't toot your own horn. Don't blow your own trumpet. Oh, you like to be seen by everybody, don't you? Look at little Miss, you know, on and on it goes.
Drama king, drama queen, all of those types of things, yeah.
Totally. What the heck does that do to a child's sense of confidence and self-esteem? Well, we know it. What it does, it destroys it. It gives the child a belief system that they should not be seen, they should not be heard, they're not worthy of being heard, they're not worthy of being seen, and on it goes.
Yeah.
So Johnson had a point. It's not just what people might think of as negative energies that go in there. It's the positive energies of confidence, of standing up and being proud about who you are and what you are, sense of self-worth and self-esteem and competence. Oh, what a little show off. Wow, look at that. Oh, you know, all of that stuff that's put down in that way is the positive side of being human that brings us out into the world. And I think one of the ways that manifests more than anything else is, in my experience, could be wrong about this, I often am, one of the greatest fears in society at large is public speaking. You know, I don't know about you, Patrick. Do you think there's truth in that or not?
Yeah, it's certainly something that you hear fairly often, right? Like,
yeah,
public speaking is the number one fear, yeah.
Oh, I've got to make a wedding speech in December and it's January and I've got 12 months to worry about it. Say, well, I know people who absolutely love going out on a stage and speaking in public and find that it's one of the most exhilarating and beautiful experiences they can have. That kind of communication with the audience, that exchange of energy. And many of them have had to do a lot of work to get to that place. So what I'm saying, and in a very indirect and roundabout way, is that there's a lot in that bag that can be taken out and can improve your life in all kinds of ways, you know. So maybe we'd better talk about how that's done then. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay.
And then just like before we do that, you know, as you were saying about like that other 90% of all the positive stuff, like we do as young children, very naturally, very authentically.
Yeah.
And then we get our, whether it's our parents or carers, whatever that looks like, saying, well, I don't like that about you. And then, so again, it comes back to that question, like, so what did you learn as a child, right? Like, well, you learned it wasn't safe to be you.
Yes.
So let's just put that back in that shadow bag for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredible, isn't it? I mean, I'm struck right now by, you know, the power of this whole way of being human to get people away from who they actually are, but also away from their humanity. You know, our natural state as a species is to be connected, to live in community together, knowing people intimately and everything that that entails, you know, all the anger, all the disruption, all the grief, all the everything. And in fact, how do we live? We've created a society where we're all separate. We don't in touch with our own feelings. We're at war on a societal level with each other. And as Robert Moore, that book that I've been Facing the Dragon referring to, was written, I think, or the lectures in it were given in the early 90s. And he was talking about a situation that he thought could evolve in society at large, which is almost exactly to what's happening right now. In other words, talk of a nuclear holocaust, a third world war, and ultimately the destruction of mankind. So we are not dealing, humankind, I should say, we are not dealing with anything trivial here. It might even be that Moore was right and our entire survival depends on doing shadow work. That's a thought.
Yeah, just, isn't it?
Isn't it just? Not an encouraging one, I think.
Well, but, I mean, it's a lovely segue into how do we do that then?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great question. So I think one thing that strikes me straight away is that we've got this model of, particularly around anger, where anger is an impulse to go out and do something in the world and it's inhibited, or it's an impulse to express energetically something quite strongly, it's inhibited. Over time, that's traumatic. So the way that shadow work would address that is to find a way of creating a situation that mirrors somehow the original traumatic situation. So the obvious example of that would be, let's say somebody comes along and says, you know, I realize people are walking all over me and I just don't know why. I just don't seem to ever respond to it. I just sort of adapt to what people say and go along with it all the time. I just feel like I don't have any energy and pulses or direction or focus of my own. What can I do about it? The first thing we'd want to do in shadow work is to try and recreate something that's even crudely, but hopefully accurately, a representation of what was going on at some point in their history that was really relevant to how they've emerged as an adult. So that could be just representing key members of the family. And of course, this is group work, but it can be done on a one-to-one basis with some interesting twists on the technique. But let's talk about group work for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get representatives out to play the role of parents, and you can give them, or rather you can ask the client to come up with lines that summarize what was going on. Don't bring your anger in here. That's not wanted. I'll give you something to cry about. And what you find happens, if that's really done accurately, is that the client will regress almost immediately. It's like you just flick a switch and they go right back to childhood and they're in that childhood environment up here once again. Mm. And that's the place where you can do something constructive. This time you're going to do it differently. You're going to give them a chance to express the anger at mum and dad or brother or sister or schoolmates or whoever it was in a physical way. And that physical expression of that anger, which is done in a very safe, controlled way, so no matter how violent it might be, it doesn't damage anybody in the present. But what it does do is give a discharge. It's completing the action that was never possible to complete when those people were kids. So that could be just beating cushions that represent particular people. It could be screaming, pushing people out of the way symbolically. We've got various techniques that people can use to complete the uncompleted action. Now, I don't want to pretend that one session of shadow work along those lines is going to cure a lifetime of trauma, because that's simply not true. But what I noticed in my own experience was that over time, each time I did some work like that, something changed inside me, until eventually I wasn't actually running around the place like some out of control, angry lunatic. That's an exaggeration. I would like to believe I never really was doing that, but you know what I mean? I've met men who do behave like that. And the same thing applies. Over time, that level of energy decreases. And as it decreases, it becomes much more under their control. So that's a kind of broad brush explanation of shadow work around anger. We can go on in a moment to just look at one or two of the other areas. But what's your reaction to that, Patrick?
I've done it. Yeah, you know, like I've actually done that process. I was guided. I was lying on the floor. I had a pillow either side of me. Yeah. This is actually a fascinating story because it you'll see in a moment. But I did the exercise and I was screaming and I was banging the floor and you just like expletives, like getting out whatever's on you, like telling how disappointed or let down you felt, like whatever you're feeling angry about, like really just letting it go, but like pounding these pillows. And then from that there's like this just felt like a release, right? Like because you move through the anger, and then because I think anger is so often the secondary emotion, isn't it? Like there's usually something underneath it.
Yeah.
But what happened was, and was fascinating, because it knocked me, is I was in my office here, and it was about 9:30 at night. I'm at the back of my garden, and I'm back onto gardens. But my next door neighbour came down, and he said, "Excuse me, Patrick." And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Could you stop that noise, please? It's really disturbing." And you know, like it was almost like I regressed in that moment. It's like, oh, I'm not supposed to do this. This is why I'm not supposed to do it.
Indeed. Yeah. Fascinating. Wonderful example of it. Just, yeah, great. That says it all, doesn't it? Yeah, it really does. And strange things like that do happen. It's extraordinary. When that energy is released, there's almost like another force at work, which is, I would say, almost spiritual in somehow making things happen in the world around one. So another example would be, you know, going back to the unmourned grandparents who died. Often they're the people who are kindest to children in our society, I find. And not to allow a child to grieve their death in a healthy way just builds up trauma in the system. So what we could do there, for example, is we could set up a situation either with a person playing the dead grandparent or whoever it was, or even some representative. We use stuffed toys quite a bit for this as well. What you need is something that a person can project an image of the dead, lost loved one onto. And then again, when you encourage them to start talking to that person or thing or whatever it is they've lost, they'll regress very, very quickly. It's extraordinary how near the surface all this stuff is. But when they've regressed into that childhood place, they then have access to all the grief, which can come pouring out of them during that process. And there are refinements as well, which make it even more powerful. But the point is, I haven't met a single person yet who's done that process and been able to engage with it who hasn't experienced massive transformation. It's extraordinary. These are so simple. I mean, they need to be held well and they need to be held with compassion. But they are so powerful, and they can be done on a one-to-one basis as well if you have a practitioner who's skilled at it and trained in the methodology. Mm. And we can do this with fear, and we can do this with all the other emotions as well. It just means adapting the process so that people can get in touch with what was originally not allowed to be expressed.
Yeah, powerful. Just to think about like what's possible when you acknowledge all of yeah. that in yourself and, you know, give yourself permission to feel it.
Well, it can be life-changing. There's no question of that.
Yeah,
I've seen enough transformations to know that that's absolutely true. People's lives are completely changed by it.
Mm. Even decades and decades later, right? Like,
yes, totally. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I met when I was training. Oh, yeah. This is a story that affects me every time I think of it and tell it. I met a guy who was 80 years old in a group workshop. And I said to him, I don't mind my asking, but you seem to be getting on a bit. What are you doing here? And he said, my life has been completely shit. There's been hardly anything of any value or worth in it. And I thought, I don't want to die feeling like this. So I've come to do some personal work. And I met him. Yeah. I met him a year later at the same event, 12 months on, and said, how's your life been? And he said, the last year that I've been doing this work has more than made up for the previous 80. It's like the last 80 didn't exist. I found happiness and I found joy, at least in some measure. And now if I die, I'll die happy. Can you imagine it?
Yeah.
It's just breathtaking. And of course, I'm passionate about it. So, you know, I like to retell stories like that, but it doesn't take away from the fact that this is life-changing work.
Yeah, and I think it's absolutely incredible. And, you know, probably, possibly offers a lot of hope to a lot of guys out there to realize, you know, no matter what's happened, no matter how long ago it happened, even if you're not even aware it happened, like there's still a chance to express and heal and move through it, right?
Definitely. Shadow work is I think it's either the best or one of the best, right up there at the top of the list, ways to reclaim who you really were before the world did what it did to you, whatever that might be.
Yeah, beautiful. So there's been quite a few suggestions on books as we've gone through this episode today. So what I'll do is I'll share those with all of the guys. There's one book I'm currently reading as well, seeing as we are doing book reviews. It's called Existential Kick. Existential Kink. Yeah, and it's called Unmask Your Shadow and Embrace Your dark side. I can't remember. What was the rest of the
shadow side, I would assume.
Yeah, shadow side, yeah. And it's by a lady called Caroline Elliott, and she almost talks about like finding pleasure in your dark side, right? Like and it's really fascinating way, like perspective to start looking at it.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you why. Because you feel whole again.
Yeah.
You're taking what's been cut off and reintegrating it into your system in the way that looks more like it originally did than it certainly looked when it was sitting in the shadow bag. And what you're doing is reclaiming the essential parts of your own humanity. That's why it can feel joyous and healing and wholesome. You literally are putting yourself back together the way you were meant to be.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, Rod, it's been incredible to get you back on and to learn from you and have your wisdom and stories as well, right? Because they're so powerful in terms of the experiences you've had and other people. So I appreciate you and thank you. Is there anything that you wanted to add or offer or even just let guys know how to get in touch with you?
Well, if you wouldn't mind just putting a reference to my book on, that's got lots of information about about workshops that people, both men and women, can do.
Sure.
That either mixed workshops or all men or women. You know, and I would just simply say in conclusion, Patrick, you know, if there are people listening to this who are thinking, oh, well, that sounds interesting. Should I? Shouldn't I? just take the risk. Go and do it.
All right, there you go, guys. That's it. Just embrace those shadow sides, right? Like, let's stop hiding our essence, our uniqueness, our beauty, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's bring it all out into the open. Yeah. All right, Rod, thank you so much for coming on again, man. It's been great.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Absolute pleasure. Loved it.
Nice one. And guys, thanks for listening, and I'll see you all again soon. Take care and bye-bye. If you want to find out more about working with me and seeing how I can help you stop drinking and start showing up in life the way that you really want, visit patrickjfox.com to find out more or book a free consultation using the link in the show notes. Until next time, take care.